5G wireless network backup. AT&T? Nope. Call 1-800-501-6000 to get 75 megabit.
Take a look at Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family.
This call is being recorded.
So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, I hope it's Friday, living for the weekend. So I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do, can do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, please don't procrastinate. Don't put it off. Don't be hemming and hawing. Get it done. Especially if it has to be done. Be that honorable brother and sister. Go beyond and get it done. I love it. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Here on the Motherland Media Network and timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to us live, then you can go to timeforanawakening.com. Scroll down on the right side till you see the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed, and click onto that, and you can get a chance to go to the archives, which are titled and dated. And we thank Brother Elliot and Brother Scotty Reed. Brother Elliot is with Time for an Awakening, and Scotty Reed's Black Talk Radio Network for helping to create this forum, which I'm proud to be on. Other programs on Time for an Awakening on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6, all times I'm going to give our Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds, Monday through Friday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, which is a public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. And right after that, 8 p.m. until 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 p.m. to 10. Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, Revive. Wednesday, 8 p.m. until 10. On today, Friday, if it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening, 8 p.m. until. Tomorrow, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it is not me. It is Sister POC with Revive,
Proof of Consciousness, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until it is time for an awakening once again with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. If you want to join the conversation or just want to listen, well, of course, you just want to listen. And you are listening right now. Tell others to download TuneIn. Once they've done it, they have it. Get into the search. Get into the search and then put in Time for an Awakening into the search. And now you and make it a favorite. And now you'll have Time for an Awakening. And on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 18 Pacific, you can listen to the program. But if you just want to call and listen, you can do that too. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. For all the programs I just mentioned, that is the call-in number for Time for an Awakening. So, you know what this program is about, right? Because every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I state it. I want to make sure that that you understand that we need to I want to make sure I'm clear. I've had some technical difficulties. That's why I wasn't on the air exactly at 11. Those have been worked out, I hope so. I hope you and you know that you are listening. Sometimes what you may need to do is that if you're listening on a mobile device or even on your computer, come out of it. Come out of the program. Go into something else if it's, you know, and then come back in. And that should help, you know, because I think that's one of the things that really will help if you go out of the program and then you come back in. So, this program, once again, is about, for African people, independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what we espouse on this program. That's what we talk about. That's what we deal with. So, this is Baba Baruti, Baba Mwali Mumbaruti. We are sovereignty-seeking warriors. That's what I am. That's what we are. That's what we should all be, a sovereignty-seeking warrior. That we want independence, that we want self-determination, that we want liberation, that we want sovereignty for our people. And what is sovereignty? The successful outcome of any nationalist movement is sovereignty for the people. Being sovereign means having absolute control over the life of the nation. Right now, as always, for African people, sovereignty is measured by how intelligently, independently, and powerfully we control our resources, our story, our culture, our time, space, and destiny. It is to have the power within the nation to control our lives and to control them in the best interest, regardless of opposition from outside of us. Accordingly, being sovereign has to mean that there is no one beyond us, and I mean no one, who makes any decision about how we rule ourselves, how we live, what we believe, how we deal with enemies, whether outside of us or inside of us, those traitors, and how we visualize our future and communicate and express that vision. It means that we are completely and consciously self-defining, self-determining, self-empowered, and self-respecting. And since no nation has ever risen to power and stayed there without holding their own tradition sacred, sovereignty necessarily means that we know, respect, protect, and extend in time through every coming generation. Who we are has a direct reflection of our ancestors. Sovereignty is our ultimate goal. The reason why I read that periodically, because I want it to be clear that every topic, every discussion that we have here in African Perspectives, we deal with it from that viewpoint, from that worldview. Everything. If I'm talking about sports, politics, whether local, state, nation, or international, I'd like to thank this past Wednesday when we talked about Winrus and the Winrus generation. If you're not familiar, there is a piece on AtlantaBlackStar.com, and you know I love AtlantaBlackStar.com for outstanding narratives and video streams. Check out AtlantaBlackStar.com. There's a piece in there about the Winrus generation, and what that is that after the Second World War, y'all, British brought in Africans from the Caribbean and from the continent to help clean up London and help clean up the UK from being bombed by the Germans and so forth, and in World War II. And were given citizenship to stay, supposedly. But now they want to deport them. They want to get rid of them. In fact, if you listen to the program, Brother Lone Roof and Brother Paul, they stated the fact that some of them have even been burning documents so they can deport these brothers and sisters from the Winrus generation. So, you know, I'm telling you, these Europeans ain't nothing nice. They are nothing nice. In fact, today I'm going to read a piece by Dr. George Yancey. George Yancey, he, back in around Christmas time, 2015, in the New York Times op-ed page, he wrote an open letter to Caucasian Americans, to American Europeans. Dear white people, you know, they always say that words have meaning, and to me, people, and I heard a number of people, I mean, even fathead Roland Martin said that a number of times, but yet he continues to use slave when describing our people. If words have meaning, then we should watch the words that we say, particularly in a language that is not ours. That's why I'm saying that we need to evaluate the words that we use. We're not black, and they're not white. They're the ones who came up with the idea of white. They're the race. They're the ones who came up with the concept of race. There is no such thing as race. If you want to use the term the human race to describe all humanity, you're ahead with that one. But when you look at it scientifically, when you look at it archaeologically, anthropologically, sometimes these words are hard to get out, aren't they? You realize and understand that Africans were the first people on the planet. They are the fathers and mothers of humanity. Everybody else comes later. But Europeans, Caucasians, you know, when they first encountered us, they didn't act superior because they knew they weren't. They sat at our feet. They sat at our feet. Humanity sat at our feet to learn the disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, law, religion, you name it, and we did it. The Greeks are a bunch of pillagers. I mean, the Greeks have messed up since that. Europeans, I'm telling you, man, when you study this stuff, you can't help but be like, damn. So the Greeks began to put, after the Persians came into Kemet with destruction and oppression and so forth. This, of course, is long, long, thousands of years after the dynastic periods. Thousands of years after the dynastic periods. There were 30 dynasties in ancient Kemet. The dynasties appeared at the time of the family rules, and there were 30 of them. Not like the British crown, where there's one group, no matter how dysfunctional, no matter how, you know, vile and lawless that they are. In fact, it is alleged that Jack the Ripper came out of the British royalty, so to speak. They maintain. But in ancient Kemet, no. Might didn't make right. Right made right. And you were held to standards of righteousness. And if you were not, the priesthood got together and your family was out. 30 dynasties in ancient Kemet. So when the Persians came in and they were dogmatic, and then the Greeks helped get the Persians out, and of course then the Greeks ruled in ancient Kemet for a number of years, and then of course the Romans came in. But one thing to understand about this, and as you study this, you begin to understand that the culture, see, there's no such thing as race. There's cultures. The culture was superior. The culture was superior, and it maintained, even though the Romans were there, the Greeks were there, and so forth, the culture maintained. Even the Persians, the culture was superior. The culture did not change until Islam came on the scene and swept across North America in the 7th century, the 600s. And because they had no respect for the culture, and number one, Kemetic culture was under sand. Ancient culture was, you know, they had taken the limestone coverings off the great pyramids at Giza to make mosques and buildings and so forth, because they had no respect for, they didn't understand it, you know. The body of Hori Maket, what the Greeks call the Sphinx, was buried under sand. It wasn't until later, in fact, really the study of Kemet, which the Europeans called Egyptology, became invoked at the time we were enslaved. And so when they broke into those tombs and they seen, you know, the Medu Netcher, or what the Greeks call hieroglyphs, and they seen the pictures and so forth, that's why many of them did not want that to happen. There's an outstanding piece that Richard Pryor did along with Robin Williams on when Richard Pryor had his show in the 70s, where there's four people, one Richard Pryor, Robin Williams, and two other Caucasians. They bust into this tomb. They bust into a pyramid, and then Richard Pryor looks at the Book of Life, which the Greeks called the Book of the Dead, or Europeans called the Book of the Dead, which actually was called the Book of Coming Forth by Day. So he's reading it and talking about the things that we've done and so forth. And then he says, I'm going to get this book out of here. We're going to change history. You know, we're going to make our people understand that we were the first to do da-da-da. And so the three of them back out, close the door, keep them in there, and said, we'll bulldoze this. Very profound, because what is it saying? This knowledge of self has to be suppressed. Even to this day, a lot of our people don't know what we have done. We believe, and we've been made to believe, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, and nothing could be furthest from the truth. Nothing. But yet, it persists. Number one, because a lot of our people don't want to read. Well, if you don't want to read, damn it, go to YouTube and let the ancestors speak. If you don't want to read, go to YouTube and listen and learn. There is a plethora of knowledge and information that you can acquire instead of listening to the videos and music and so forth and foolishness. Arm yourself with the knowledge of yourself. with the knowledge of your people and the greatness of you. So we're going to today deal with what Professor George Yancey had to deal with when he wrote that op-ed page in, right before Christmas. He was, in fact, he even titled it's a gift. It's a gift of love to Caucasian people. And what he wanted to do was to make Caucasian people look at themselves and look at the situation that they have created. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It affects the planet. It adversely affects the planet. And it's, as I mentioned before, this didn't happen from the beginning, because when they first encountered us, no, we made them chill. This is recent. Europe fell into a dark age, a medieval age, when the only light in Europe that was happening was in the western part of Europe because of the Moors. When they began to gather themselves and come up out of it and say to themselves that, you know, whoever's going to run the world is going to be us. We made war amongst ourselves, and believe me, they did. We're going to come together and subdue the planet. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said the reason why they do that and done that is because they have a fear of genetic annihilation. Because when they came out of that and started going around the world, taking everybody's stuff in the name of, they had intimate relationships with the females, rape, and looking at the offspring didn't look like them. Because basically, the vast majority of the people on the planet are melanated. That means they have coloration. That means their skin pigmentation is darker. And so that fear makes them collectively come together and to subdue and dominate the planet. That's who they are. That's who they are today. And that's who they'll be until we, African people, come into our right minds and step outside of the imposed boundaries that they placed us in, or more importantly, release the vice grip that they have on our minds. Understanding that tool, that once you set the vice grip, and they have set it, and they believe, it will remain in place forever. But no, there is that knob at the end of the handle. The turning of that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. And the more you acquire knowledge, the better you're able to turn that knob until finally, bam, the vice grip is released. And you can see the European, the Caucasian for who and what they are. Not that you challenge them like Professor Yancey did. He was challenging Caucasians. He was challenging them to look at themselves. I don't give a damn about Caucasians. In fact, they can't tell me, you know what, I'm going to be cussing on today's program, because in his response, the ugly truth, he reads the letters that were sent to him. And I'm going to read those letters, how they were sent to him, as he wrote them in his response. We were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose. And today, many of our people believe that because they are ashamed to be African. They're ashamed to be black. Bleaching creams, number one selling product, damn near around the damn world. Look at our people, Sammy Sosa. That's ridiculous. Michael Jackson, all of them. Of course, there is vitiligo, where the pigment of your skin, you begin to lose it, begin white spots. But hey, you know what? If you got some money, you don't have to be Caucasian looking. You can be dark. And in the effort for all these folks who want to be light, nobody ever said, you know, I want to be dark. I want to darken my skin. Now, Caucasians want to do that. They risk skin cancer by doing that, don't they? They go into the sun and they stay there and they bake for a minute. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting piece today. And I'm glad that you're here with us. And great, George Yancey has a new book out, just came out. Backlash. This is from the response that he received. I'm going to be reading some of the things that he said. What happens when we talk honestly about racism in America? The foreword is by Cornel West. When George Yancey penned a New York Times op-ed entitled "Dear White America," asking Caucasians to confront the ways that they have benefited from racism, he knew this article would be controversial, but he was unprepared for the flood of vitriol in response. The resulting blowback played out in national media, with critics attacking Yancey in every form possible, including death threats, and supporters rallying to his side despite the rhetoric of a post-race America. Yancey quickly discovered that racism is still alive and well, crude and vicious in its expression. In Backlash, Yancey explains and expands upon the original article and chronicles the ensuing controversy as he seeks to understand what it was about the op-ed page that created such rage among so many Caucasian readers. He challenges Caucasians to rise above the vitriol and to develop a new empathy for African Americans' experience. Yeah, stop it. Once again, even when you release that vice grip, even when you step outside those imposed boundaries, there is nothing that you can do, Professor Yancey, or nobody. Franz Fanon said it best. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. What Yancey did in that op-ed piece, if you get a chance to read it, it's from December 24th. Like I said, it was a gift he wanted to give them. He wanted them to really look at themselves and look at what they have done and what they continue to do. He really wanted them to take a moment and step outside of the comfort of their Caucasianness. Yeah. They can give less than a rat's ass about us. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe that they are superior. And no matter how much evidence, how much proof, and there's a plethora of that, to state otherwise, they dismiss it, they ignore it because it makes them feel some kind of way, an uneasy feeling about what they have done. And they maintain that position. In fact, in their mindset, any and everything that was done, and if it was done for the benefit of humanity, they did it. They did it. They often suffer from, as Dr. D'Angelo said, she said in her work, they suffer from fragility. European Caucasian fragility. They don't want to hear what we're going to talk about. They don't want to hear how evil they are and what they have done. They don't want to hear about the genocide. They don't want to hear about the rape. They don't want to hear about the taking of people's stuff. They don't want to hear about none of that. Just like in the movie, A Few Good Men. I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. They can't. They can't. In fact, when I was reading that, and I think I did. I did that a few months ago. There's a audio piece from Dr. D'Angelo that I played that, which is not very long, explaining what she was going through. And, of course, there's some written information, which I read a few years ago, back when I first moved here to Atlanta from Milwaukee, when I was on Blog Talk Radio at the time. Because for me, I feel just like Professor Yancey, I can talk on this subject with authority. No, I don't have a PhD. Hell, I don't even have a damn degree. I'm a high school damn dropout, but I had to get a GED so I can get on the fire department. Went to a few years school and associates. But no, and I don't give a damn who has a PhD, a bachelor's, a master's. Do you understand the damn issue from our perspective? Do you understand what has happened to us? Do you understand what is happening to us? But more importantly, do you understand the solution? Our people don't understand the solution. We keep begging these Caucasians, just like Professor Yancey, believing that somehow making them confront their ugliness, their meanness, their evilness will somehow make them recognize our humanity, recognize our suffering, making them recognize what they have done to us, how we speak a language that is not ours, how we look at ourselves to such degree that we want to change ourselves, change our hair, change our eyes, change our face. Just as Dr. Jerome Fox said, we are addicted to white. We are addicted to white. I got a caller. I'm going to see if they want to say something, because I'm going to get off into this piece after the break. After the break. Good morning, caller. 850. Good morning, caller.
Morning, morning.
Good morning.
How you doing? This is Brother Wolf.
I'm sorry. You broke up on me. Who is this?
This is Brother Wolf. Brother Wolf checking in from Pensacola, Florida.
Right on, Pensacola, Florida. Welcome. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I got a chance to meet you at the Straight Black Pride Conference.
Oh, yes.
In Atlanta.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Well, you got in on a good program today. Stick with us, okay? And if you want to, let me tell you this. If you want to ask a question, you have a question, comment, or concern, then if you go out, if you hang up and call right back, I'll recognize that, and you can get that in. So if you just want to listen, I'll just continue to put you on hold, okay?
Okay, yeah, I'll call back because I always have, like, perspective to bring in as well. So
good. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, brother, and it was a pleasure meeting you, man.
Oh, yes, and definitely after the call, you know, I'm probably going to call you as well, because, you know, we have some activities going on this afternoon, and definitely my libations. I might be doing libations tonight, so I got some questions on
beautiful that. Good. Please call me right back, okay, after the program at 1. Well, actually, Pensacola, you're on Central Time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're on Central Time. So just call me right back after the program, but continue to listen, okay? And if you want to say something, please do that.
Okay, so just hang up and just call back.
Right. If you want to ask a question, well, if you want to ask a question right now, go ahead.
Okay. So, I mean, it's so much currently for me right now, because I'm in my development and my lightness stage. But one of the things that I had a discussion with somebody earlier is how we've been socially diluted to have this perception of that we're included, and not understand the concept of unity as a whole. Mm-hmm. We're socially diluted to where we have pockets, and we have a lot of unconsciousness going on currently. And so, and for us to do anything in particular, is no particular type of power, because we've been diluted into this corrupt society.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess kind of hitting on that, I don't really, it's not really necessarily a question, but, because I mean, it's just, I'm listening. I'm just tuning in, listening to
Wait,
it.
How so you listen to talking, dude?
Okay. Hold on. Okay. Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, that's what I've been kind of thinking about, us being socially diluted into this, this corruption or the westernized philosophy that we're currently in. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a lot of topics, a lot of relevant topics going on currently, to where these conversations should be having, you know, having call-ins like this and having radio programs like this is definitely helpful. But having more things are starting to strike home, it seems like, because, you know, some of these are celebrities, some of these are family members. These things are going, you got the lynching going on in Atlanta currently and stuff like that, and all these different topics going on, and this should be awakenings for a lot of different folks.
And you're right.
But it still seems like it's that stronghold, like you said, we're addicted to being white. Mm-hmm. You know, white folks tolerate us. They tolerate us. But then once you interfere with their whiteness, then it's an issue. Mm-hmm. Then it's an issue. They'll tolerate you all day and night, you know, smiling
in
your face.
That's right.
You know, buy you lunch. But then once you speak out against or speak on truth, then it's issues. Then it's like, oh, I don't, you know, something's going on. You know, yeah. You got to shut them up or something ain't right. Or something's wrong with them or right. Something's wrong with her, you know.
Well, it's just like I was saying about Dr. D'Angelo and her work coming right out of the Trayvon Martin piece. And what she was trying to do, I believe, was trying to make Caucasians understand what they have done and how it affects other people, other groups of people. And so when she talked to them about racism, all the things that they have done, the taking of land, the killing of people, the genocide of the indigenous people, what they have done in what is now called Australia, when they couldn't handle it. They can't handle it because they like to believe that what they have done was a benefit for the world. The religion they gave the world with a European savior, Caucasian-looking savior, was a benefit for the world. They want to believe that the control of the world is by them is just and honest and righteous, you see. And nothing could be furthest from the truth. But they don't even want to hear from Caucasians. So you know they don't want to hear from your ass. They don't want to hear nothing from us. In fact, they don't want to hear about the issue of reparations. They don't want to hear the issue of land reapportionment. They don't want to hear nothing. They just want you to shut up, enjoy whatever little benefits that you may have that they may parcel out to you in their system. Because understand this, my brother, this just not as America. This is global. This happens on the continent. The control of European dominance is a global phenomenon. And so, to me, you know, we have to understand that and of course, come together. Not that we fight them, because I think the only thing that we really need to do is open up our minds, open up our hearts to believe in ourselves and each other, to come together to deal with the issue of independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. For us as a people, like nobody, the cracker, you know, I'm going to be cussing today on the program. I cuss, but not on the program. But I am today because of the article I'm going to read in the response from Professor Dr. George Yancey to his letter to Caucasians a couple years ago, Dear White America, you know, asking them from his perspective, asking them to open their hearts, open their minds, see what they have done, you know, appealing to them, trying to, you know, it's just like what, you know, Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael said about Dr. King. You know, Dr. King continues to push this moral persuasion. That'll work, but not on the people who are not moral. Caucasians are amoral. They're not. They could give less than a rat's ass about what happened to you, how you feel, the fact that they've destroyed your culture, your language, your traditions, and given you a religion that is tied to them with an image that is tied to them. And I don't give a damn how long you had a picture of black Jesus. The fact remains, the Christian religion is European. The Christian religion changed European in 325, when Constantine made it the official religion. And then that religion began to be spread on the world. When they came out of that dark age, medieval age, one of the main things they came with was the religion to impose upon indigenous people. That anything that you had, any cultural things that you had, I'm kicking that to the curb and you're going to accept this. Now, of course, if you didn't accept it, you know what happened, right?
No, yes, sir.
You bet. Yes, you bet. Well, I'm going to take another call. Just stick with us, okay? Stick right with us.
Yes.
All right, brother.
Yes, sir.
We got a caller, 848-848. Okay. We got a caller, 404-404.
Hey, peace and blessing, my brother. How you doing?
I'm doing fine today, dear brother. How are you?
Hey, I'm still trying to learn this issue. I try to perpetuate myself on this here planet in 2018, right here. But I want to thank my man, Elliot, and my man, Scotty.
I do too, brother.
For giving us the opportunity.
I do too.
All right.
I do too.
So my name, Wes, I'm in the ATL. What's your name now?
My name is Brother Oshie. I'm Brother Oshie. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and I'm glad you joined. Okay?
Yes, sir. You're in Atlanta too, right?
Yes, I am.
All right. That's good, my man. That's good. But
okay.
See, right now, we in a time of changing, man, and we elevate. Whether we know it, this whole planet, we move into a new level where the whole, everybody on this planet is going through a transition where the old rule is coming out. All the way the white folks rule, the evil stuff coming to an end now.
That's right. Well, let me just say this. I understand what you're saying about these moves, but I also know the mentality of what we're dealing with. These folks ain't nothing nice.
Yes,
and I believe.
See, brother.
Huh? Go ahead.
See, I don't, that word you say believe, now, I don't want to get it to you with that. But I study these weaponry, man, and what's going on now. What they doing every week is the flavor of the week, which brother that they going to throw under the bus or shoot up and kill. You noticing that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this week Kanye, last week Bill Cosby.
Mm-hmm.
The week before then, them two brothers at the doggone Starbucks. Before
sure.
that, it was my man in Sacramento that mm-hmm. got shot 20-something time in Grandma's mm-hmm. driveway.
Yeah.
Okay? And so...
those are the things that are known. And
yes,
because
sir.
Of Bill horrific, but there's plenty of individuals, not with the notoriety of celebrity or how horrific it is. I just saw a number of pieces. If you continue to watch online, you see police beating up. In fact, I'm from Milwaukee. They sent me two pieces from Milwaukee just recently where the cops, I mean, about 6-7 of them. I mean, they just pummeling this brother. I mean, just beating him down. I mean, he got a few licks in, but of course they're gonna do him in. Because that's how it goes.
It's on us to handle this. The first move we got to make, man, is cut this. See, they got a subliminal thing on us where we turn it on ourselves. See? That's the first move we got. Before we can be able to fight them, we gotta stop fighting and taking our own soldiers out.
By design. We're supposed to take each other out. We're supposed to not. We're trained to hate ourselves. We're trained to hate each other. We're trained not to believe and trust one another. You know?
So that starts
from the beginning.
So therefore, I'm going to tell you what happened to me, man. Okay? I was like everybody else, a black man, okay? A couple of years ago, they had me where I'm arguing with everybody, particularly black, white people too, myself. So I said, damn, what the hell I'm arguing with all my folks? What's going on with them? So what... The inspiration came to me. I listened to my man, Michael. What do you say? The number one thing Michael Jackson said was, God with the man in the mirror. And once I changed me, man, and like, I can't get an argument with nobody, man. I changed me. It's like a ripple effect. I changed me, then when I see my brother and sister, I show them love. They can't make me argue with you. I'll kill you or my sister, my brother. And so it's going to have to be a ripple effect, man.
Right on.
Then we big build out of defenses up. Well, I swear to God, man, if I see one of them devils jumping on my sister, my brother, I'm not going to just sit around and fear me like everybody
else
would talk about it.
Thank you.
I'm helping my folk, man. I already told my lawyer.
Yeah.
If God put me in
huh? Well, I'm glad you told your lawyer, because if you intervene, they're going to beat your ass down and take you to jail as well. Because I know even
on... it's all good, man. I'd rather give my life to help my people, particularly if they're hitting on one of our black women or girls.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Or my brother.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I get it.
But see,
the way we outnumber them anyway, man.
See, when I was on the fire department, we had a run where a brother allegedly needed some medical attention because he had done cocaine and so forth. So these two cops come in, and they come in with a funky attitude, like they, you know, we have the situation under control and so forth. And they started going around the man's house and, hey, what y'all doing? So basically. Some discussion happened, and then bam, physically, it started to ensue. And so when they're about to beat this cat down, my instinct, too, is to protect my people. So I grabbed a brother try to shield him from the two cops, and the cop put his hand on his gun as he looked up at me, you know. Mm-hmm. But I had that brother, I had him down, and I tried to get between him and those two cops from whooping his ass. And so I was holding on to him. Well, I got reprimanded by the department. In fact, they told me that never do that again. And if you will, of course, there'll be some serious punishment. I don't say discipline, because discipline means self-imposed order. They use the word discipline when they really mean punishment. So there would be punishment on me, possibly suspension, maybe even termination. I don't know. But they said next time you see something like that, just document it and then, you know, come forth. Just document the fact that they beat a man to death while you sat there.
Hey, Ochi, I want to speak to Wes. Yeah, what's up, bro?
Go ahead, Jay.
I'm sorry about that, Ochi.
Okay.
Hey, Wes, man, listen. I heard you the other week talking about going to Florida to take care of George Zimmerman. Bro, what happened, man? What happened? You didn't finish the job. And what's taking you so long to go back to take care of old George? Because, you know, brother, the way you made it seem was you wasn't going to take no shorts in regards to Zimmerman. What happened? You done been distracted or your kill zone?
I went down there looking for him, bro, and I waited for him. I went rode all the way around Orlando. Okay?
Yeah.
And I waited to look for him, but I could never find him, man. Okay?
Well, don't you think it may be time now for you to go take another revisit to find old George, or have you come up with somebody else in your scope? Because, you know, me, myself, brother, I'm a firm believer that black people need a Dexter.
Dexter, that series? Yeah, the Dexter, the hitman.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's what we need in his squad. I know I'm on radio, they listen, but we need a drop squad.
We need a drop squad for us, for all these Negro, Negro period.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I mean, hey, Wes, with the way you talk, brother, you are definitely could be the head of the agency, brother, because, you know, with your research and all of the other things that you into, man, I think you could be the man to really put it together to make it do what it do. You know what I mean? Because it seems like you may have that type of skill set. You know what I mean? And listen, let me tell you something. I think you in Atlanta, right?
Yes, sir.
The prime candidates to fulfill the jobs that would be able to metamorph into the community inside and outside is the homosexuals. And you got a lot of them down there in Atlanta that you could recruit to put together the drop squad. I think they would be some of your best candidates to do. The homosexuals.
Well, listen, hold on, Wes, think about that. Jay, hold this. I need to take a break, and when we come back for the break, we'll engage in further conversation, but more importantly, we're going to deal with this response, this Caucasian backlash that Dr. George Yancey received. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Check out Amira Baraka. Somebody blew up America.
Somebody blew up America. All thinking people oppose terrorism, both domestic and international. But one should not be used to cover the other. Somebody blew up America! They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan. It wasn't our American terrorists, it wasn't the Klan, or the skinheads, or the them that blows up nigger churches or reincarnates us on death row. It wasn't Trent Lott, or David Duke, or Giuliani, or Shunla, Helms retiring. It wasn't the gonorrhea in costume, the white sheet diseases that have murdered black people, terrorized reason and sanity, most of humanity, as they pleases. They say, who say, who do the saying? Who is them paying? Who tell the lies? Who in disguise? Who had the slaves? Who got the bucks out the bucks? Who got fat from plantations, who genocided Indians, tried to waste the black nation? Who live on Wall Street, the first plantation? Who cut your nuts off? Who rape your mind? Who lynch your pa? Who got the tar? Who got the feathers? Who had the match? Who set the fires? Who killed and hired? Who say they God, still be the devil? Who the biggest only? Who the most goodest? Who Jesus resemble? Who created everything? Who the smartest? Who the greatest? Who the richest? Who say you ugly and they the good lookingest? Who define art? Who define science? Who made the bombs? Who made the guns? Who bought the slaves? Who sold them? Who call you them names? Who say Dahmer wasn't insane? Who? Who stole Puerto Rico? Who stole the Indies, the Philippines, Manhattan, Australia, and the Hebrides? Who forced opium on the Chinese? Who owned them buildings? Who got the money? Who think you funny? Who lock you up? Who owned the papers? Who owned the slave ship? Who run the army? Who was the fake president? Who the ruler? Who the banker? Who the devil on the real side? Who got rich from Armenian genocide? Who the biggest terrorist? Who changed the Bible? Who kill the most people? Who do the most evil? Who don't worry about survival? Who have the colonies? Who stole the most land? Who rule the world? Who say they good but only do evil? Who the biggest executioner? Who? Who own the oil? Who want more oil? Who told you what you think that later you find out is a lie? Oh. Who found Bin Laden? Maybe they Satan. Who paid the CIA? Who knew the bomb was gonna blow? Who know where the terrorists learned to fly in Florida and San Diego? Who knew why five Israelis was filming the explosion? Cracking their sides at the notion. Who need fossil fuel when the sun ain't going nowhere? Who make the credit cards? Who get the biggest tax cut? Who walked out of the conference against racism? Who killed Malcolm, Kennedy, and his brother? Who killed Dr. King? Who would want such a thing? Are they linked to the murder of Lincoln? Who invaded Grenada, who made money from apartheid, who keep the Irish a colony, who overthrew Chile and Nicaragua later, who killed David Sebeko, Chris Hani, the same ones who killed Biko, Cabral, Neruda, Allende, Che Guevara, Sandino, who killed Kabila, the ones who wasted Lumumba, Marlene, Betty Shabazz, Princess Di, Ralph Featherstone, Little Bobby, locked up Mandela, Daruba, Geronimo, Asada, Mumia, Garvey, Dashiell Hammett, Althea Sutton. Who killed Huey Newton? Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, Mikey Smith, Walter Rodney? Was it the ones who tried to poison Fidel? Who tried to keep the Vietnamese oppressed? Who put a price on Lenin's head? Who put the Jews in ovens? And who helped them do it? Who set America first and okayed the yellow stars? Ho, ho! Who killed Rosa Luxemburg? Liebknecht? Who murdered the Rosenbergs? And all the good people iced, tortured, assassinated, vanished? Who got rich from Algeria, Libya, Haiti, Iran, Iraq, Saudi, Kuwait, Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Palestine? Who cut off people's hands in the Congo? Who invented AIDS? Who put the germs in the Indians' blankets? Who thought up the Trail of Tears? Who blew up the Maine and started the Spanish-American War? Who got Sharon back in power? Who backed Batista, Hitler, Bilbo, Chiang Kai-shek? Who? Who decided affirmative action had to go? Reconstruction, the New Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society? Who do Thomas Clarence work for? Who do come out the colon's mouth? Who know what kind of skeezer is a Condoleezza? Who pay Connolly to be a wooden Negro? Who give genius awards to Homo Locus Subsidiary? Who overthrew Nkrumah, Bishop? Who poisoned Robeson? Who tried to put Du Bois in jail? Who framed rap Jameel Alameen? Who framed the Rosenbergs, Garvey, the Scottsboro Boys, the Hollywood Ten? Who set the Reichstag fire? Who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? Explosion of owl, the newspapers say. Devil's face could be seen. Explosion of owl, the newspapers say. The devil's face could be seen. Who? Who make money from war? Who make dough from fear and lies? Who want the world like it is? Who want the world to be ruled by imperialism and national oppression and terror, violence and hunger and poverty? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is the ruler of hell? Who is most powerful? Who you know ever seen God? But everybody seen the devil. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like an owl who know the devil all night, all day, if you listen. Like an owl exploding in fire. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in yourself. Like an owl who know the devil all night, all day, if you listen. Like an owl exploding in fire. We hear the questions rise in terrible flame, like the whistle of a crazy dog. Like the acid vomit of the fire of hell. Who and who and who?
Amira Baraka, brothers and sisters. Amira Baraka. And you want to check this out? The only flack he got from that was because he said that the Jews stayed away. He was on a number of programs trying to, because he was also Poet Laureate of New Jersey at the time. And he said, because these Jews stayed away. None of the content of the poem was in question. In fact, that ain't even in question. But the fact that he challenged the Jews, just like Michael Jackson, just like Spike Lee and others, these European Jews who are not Jews, because they're Ashkenazi, they're Europeans, they're not Jews. The people who are there, Netanyahu was on last week talking about the Iranians, because they want to, these European Jews want to fight. They want to kill, just like they killed the people in what they call Israel today, particularly Africans. They wanted to deport them, even the ones they brought there 30-some years ago on the from Ethiopia, who are genetically European, excuse me, genetically Jews or Israelis or Hebrews. But that's another subject for another day. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And, of course, I'm not going to give the list of others because I came on kind of late, so I'm just going to go off right off into this. But I do want to mention these, and that's these are important. Brother Bomani Ntumbe will be my guest next Friday because he's taking a group of brothers and sisters, about 35, to Africa in a few weeks. So he'll be able to talk about that program, how you too can be a part of that. Not this one, but the one next year and the cost involved. Also, too, but how you can invest in Africa, you know, Brother Bomani. And if you want to know more, you can go to his website, Africa for African, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. You know, let's buy black. WeBuyBlack.com. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African owned businesses. Brother has a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, and the products that he sells were produced by us. All the products. Yeah, toothpaste, toothbrushes, razors, soap, and so forth and so on. I bought some lotion. I brought some pain relief cream. So, us lifting us. ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or Cooperative Economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. Cafe ULU's opened. It is in Atlanta every Monday and Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. On Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and it's located 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. Check out Cafe ULU. We are known for coffee from the Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and many more. So check out Cafe ULU. Also, go on the website of Us Lifting Us, an economic development cooperative, and become a member. And you, too, can have a share of the coffee house. Next week, Saturday, Bakasin Sum Sum, African Spiritual Warfare. My dear friend and sister, Dr. Marimba Ani. And the theme, of course, the African Bakasin Sum Sum is raising up the spirit of Dr. John Henry Clark and all of those warrior spirits. And this year, focus will be building Columbos. If you understand what Columbos are just like the Maroons in Jamaica, the Columbos getting away and establishing areas of security for our people, war camps. And so it says building Columbos from war camps to African sovereignty. That is May 12th, 12:30 to 6:30. And that is going to be in Alithia Springs, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta at Sweetwater State Park. So check that out. Also, to Black Dot Bookstore, Black Dot Bookstore in Lithonia. That sounds like a sister name, don't you? Hey, girls, what's happening in Lithonia? You know, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. 404-519-8107. Black Dot Bookstore and Cultural Center. I'm going to have that brother on real soon to talk about what's happening at the Black Dot. Let's get off into this piece here. Glad you're holding. I want you to get off into this piece with me. As I said, I read the article by Professor Yancey, and I read the whole article on Dear White America and his passion plea right before Christmas of 2015, asking them to open their hearts and open their minds and understand what they have done and to understand the racism that they have perpetuated. And here is the response. He finally wrote it. He's got a book out called Backlash. I mentioned that earlier. But this is from the Chronicle, The Ugly Truth of Being a Black Professor in America. Now, understand, I'm going to be changing words, but I will not change the words of the response. And I'll read them as he presented them by George Yancey. Dear nigger professor, that was the beginning of a message that was sent to me. It had nothing. This is nothing to be cherished here, despite the salutation. Years ago, Malcolm asked, what does a Caucasian man call an African man with a PhD? He answered, a nigger with a PhD. The message came in response to an op-ed I published in the New York Times in December of 2015. I spent much of that year conducting a series of interviews with philosophers about race. I wanted to hold a disagreeable mirror up to Caucasian readers and ask that they take a long, hard look without fleeing, without getting away. My article, Dear White People, took the form of a letter asking readers to accept the truth of what it means to be Caucasian in a society created for Caucasian people. I asked them to tarry with the ways in which they perpetuate a racist society, the ways in which they are racist. In return, I asked for understanding, and I asked for even love. Love in a sense that James Baldwin used the term. Love takes off the mask that we wear. We cannot live without it, and we know we cannot live within it. Instead, I received hundreds of emails, phone messages, and letters, an overwhelming number of which were filled with racist vitriol. My university did it. He's at Emory University here in Atlanta. And I tried to call him a couple of times and left messages. I'm still going to do that. I'd love to have him on the program so we can talk about what he has experienced. My university did it. It's important. It's necessary part. Top administrators assured me that my academic freedom was protected. Yet, my predicament was not easy. Campus police had to monitor my office. Departmental instructions were clear. No one was to provide any strangers with any office hours. I needed police presence at some of my invited talks at other universities. It all felt surreal and dangerous. This is what it likes to be a target of racist hate. Another uppity nigger. Calling a nigger professor is like calling white, black, and wet, dry. Even the most sophisticated nigger will revert back to their jungle bunny behavior when excited. You can dress a nigger up in a suit and a tie, and they still be a nigger. This belief has niggers even reason is blatant pseudo-intellectualism. They believe it's pseudo-intellectualism. For these writers, nigger professor is an oxymoron. A nigger is a nigger, incapable of reason. Kent, Hegel, and Jefferson each made similar claims about African people being berated of irrationality. Besides, perhaps I'm just parroting, as Hume said of African people, what we have already heard. I'm just a nigger who dared to reason only to discover that reason is white. The concept of being an intellectual nigger is a joke. Perhaps this person had spoken to the woman who left the following on my university answering machine. Dear professor, I'm a white American citizen. You are the one who is racist against white people, evidently. A professor, I bet you got your PhD through a mail order. On a racist white website, one writer had apparently seen through my game. This coon is a philosopher in the same way Martin Luther King was a PhD, in the same way that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are reverends. Just another jive-ass nigger with a new way to pimp. Some of my students of color have asked me, why talk about race with Caucasian people? When at the end of the day, everything remains the same. That is, their racism continues. Why teach courses on race and whiteness? Do you really think that such courses will make a difference? I find these questions haunting that nag at my conscience. Instead, there are times when I ask myself, why do I do this? After all, I don't write about Caucasianness because it's a new fad in philosophy. And I'm certainly not a masochist. There is no pleasure to be had in being the object of hate. I'm sure that a few of my American African colleagues and colleagues of color think that I've lost my sanity. Perhaps they think that I've asked for all of this and that I had remained silent, I would have been fine. The reality, of course, is that they're too are seen as niggers, and silence will not help. In 2015, I was invited to be a plenary speaker at a well-established philosophy conference. I was excited. After all, I was there to deliver my talk within the company of kindred philosophical spirits, those who knew something about feminism, disability, aesthetics, and race. There was one other American-African philosopher in attendance, though he was older, taller, heavier, and very gray. All the other attendees were Caucasian. The day after I gave my talk, the other American-African philosopher told me that several attendees had, with no apparent hesitation, complimented him on my talk. "That was a very important talk you gave yesterday." "Wow, great talk, inspiring." No less than 7 congratulatory gestures were made. Had there only been 1 or 2, perhaps, it could have been brushed off. But 7? 7 times? This was a manifestation of an all-too-familiar mode of being Caucasian, a habit of a perception that sees African people as all the same through a fixed image. This was Caucasian racism. My colleague, the American-African philosopher, who had not given the talk, somehow became me and I him. In that philosophical and sophisticated and psychological progress Caucasian space, I could hear a strange and profoundly irritating echo of a little Caucasian child whom Franz Fanon encountered on a train. "Look, a Negro." There was a similar sense of being fixed, static. The two of us became one African person. Any African man, every African man, we were flattered, rendered one-dimensional, indistinct, and repeatable. Another letter. "Hey, Georgia boy, you're a fucking racist, asshole. You wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for affirmative action. Somebody needs to put a boot up your ass and knock you off your fucking head, off your shoulders, you stupid fucking goddamn racist son of a bitch. You fucking race-baiting son of a bitch. Man, you're just asking to get your fucking ass kicked. You need your fucking ass kicked, you stupid motherfucker. Quit fucking race-baiting, you asshole." It is probably true that I would not have my job if it were not for affirmative action. And believe me, brothers and sisters, this is me talking, Oshie. I wouldn't have had my job with the fire department if it wasn't for affirmative action. And many jobs, and now fire departments in major cities are becoming more Caucasian because affirmative action ended, just like Reconstruction ended, lasting about 10 years. It probably was true. I would not have had my job if it were not for affirmative action. Many Caucasian women wouldn't have jobs either, because they were the biggest beneficiaries of affirmative action. Look at it. And of course, Caucasian men have benefited from Caucasian supremacy for years and decades. But affirmative action is not Caucasian supremacy in reverse. It is not anti-Caucasian, but it is pro-justice. It was created so that with my PhD, which I earned with distinction, I would actually be able to teach at a university. Affirmative action in the case of African people is a response to systematic racial disadvantage. It's important to get the history right and not get it twisted. I felt particularly sickened by the letters. There were quite a few sent to me through regular postal mail, handwritten and signed. These are even more disturbing than emails, given the level of the industry expanded, writing, printing, stamping, mailing. The opening of one such letter read, "I'm a racist. How dare you call me that? You're a racist. And hey, since African people called each other nigger, I'm taking the liberty of doing the same. Either the word is offensive or taboo, or it isn't." To me, it is. I'm not buying it. I once had 2 Caucasian students attempt to argue that they should be allowed to use the word with the ER as opposed to ending it with the GA whenever they want it, and that it is discriminatory to say that they can't. Any response at all felt too generous. I often heard Caucasian people express the feelings of being somehow left out from African spaces, which are necessary for African sanity precisely because of Caucasian racism. It is as if Caucasian people are driven by a colonial despair to possess everything. Du Bois asks, but what on earth is whiteness that one should be so desiring of it? He answered, whiteness is the ownership of the earth forever and ever. Amen. Damn. That's deep, ain't it? And that's their mindset. Whiteness is the ownership of the earth forever and ever. Amen. The two Caucasian students spoke with arrogance and their desire for total Caucasian ownership. It was not so much that they were deprived of historical knowledge, as this knowledge meant nothing when it comes to their sense of lost power. To read Caucasian racist vitriol can be traumatic. To hear Caucasian racist vitriol intensifies the impact. One lessens to the infliction of the voice, its volume, its nervousness, its hatred, its terror. I registered a wound psychologically, mood swings, irritability, trepidation, disgust, anger, nausea. Words do things. I repeat, words do things. That's why I'm adamant about understanding words. Like slave. Stop saying we were slaves. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We always resisted. We fought. There's over 400 recordings of our people fighting. Stop saying we black. We're not black. We're Africans. Black is a color. Africa is a noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. They ain't white, but they created a concept of white. And because of that opposite, we created a concept of black. They're Europeans. They're British. They're French. They're Spanish. They're German. They're Caucasians. They're Europeans. I digress. Words do things. They carry the vestiges of the bloody and brutal context which gave birth. One might think that being called a nigger so many times might decrease in its impact. It doesn't. All African people in the United States, irrespective of their class status or politics, according to bell hooks, live with the possibilities that they will be terrorized by Caucasianness. The many responses of Caucasian people to dear white people was just that, 21st century Caucasian terror. That terror can come in many forms. Perhaps an American African man screams, I can't breathe, 11 times, but no one cares. Eric Gardner. Or perhaps after he has been shot by accident, he musters enough strength to say aloud, he's losing his breath. Eric Harris. Only to hear a Caucasian police officer responds, fuck your breath. Perhaps his spine gets severed, Freddie Gray. Perhaps he's a teenager and is shot 16 times, Laquan McDonald in Chicago. Pulling out a wallet can lead to getting shot 41 times and hit with 19 bullets, Amadou Diallo. Perhaps an innocent 7-year-old child, Ayanna Stanley Jones, is killed by police during a raid, just as was true of Emmett Till 63 years ago. There is no place that one can call safe in America for African bodies. And at no time in history, from the moment we were brought here to this very day, by recounting in explicit language the Caucasian backlash that I encountered after writing Dear White America, those violent and dehumanizing racist modes of address, I risk becoming re-traumatized. The retelling is imperative enough. For too long, I have had American African students say to me that they feel unsafe at PCIs, predominantly Caucasian institutions. I must believe them. And while they may not have been called nigger to their faces, each Caucasian space's position them has inconsequential, deny their Africanness through a superficial concern for diversity, and take their complaints as instances of individual problems of institutional adjustment. I insist on bearing witness to African pain and suffering at PCIs because the deniers are out there. We are told that what we know in our very bodies to be true is incredible. This kind of different kind of violence is endemic kind and is systemic. On November 11, 2017, I received a letter in my university mailbox. It was handwritten on both sides in black ink on a sheet of paper torn from a yellow legal pad. There were no return address. Every time I touched it, as I must do now for the purpose of transcribing a word for word, I washed my hands afterwards. Dear Mr. Yancey, I'm writing to you to voice my displeasure with what you said about white people. You claim that all white people are racist. Really now? You, sir, are one to talk. You sound just like the following racists. Here is a list of who I mean. They're Al Sharpton, Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey, Spike Lee, Samuel L. Jackson, Bill Cosby, Bill Cosby, Danny Glover, Heller Belafonte, movie director John Singleton, Shannon Sharp, Scottie Pippen, rappers Ice Cube, Chuck D, Flavor Flav, Flavor Flav, DMX, and Snoop Dogg, former Major League Baseball player Carl Everett, Ray Durham, and Hall of Famer Hank Aaron. When I read what you said about white people, I was like this guy in a total low-life racist piece of shit. It's so true. You are an asshole. You deserve to be punished with several fists to your face. You're nothing but a troublemaker. You need to really get a life. I've had enough of your racist talk. You better watch what you say and to whom you say it to. You may just end up in a hospital with several injuries or maybe a cold slab in a local morgue. I wouldn't be surprised if you've gotten several death threats. You're inviting trouble when you accuse the entire white race of being racist. You've got a big mouth that needs to be slammed shut permanently. I'm not going to give you the opportunity to find out who I am. Good luck with that. By the way, this letter I'm sending you is certainly not a death threat. I could have done that, but that's not me. I'm tired of your racist kind. Please tarry with these words. My life has just been threatened. The writer belies their intentions by denying that the letter is a death threat. The writer does communicate something quite revealing, though. They imply that they could be someone that I see every day, someone I walk by, greet, or even teach. All the smiles, the eye contact, and the social spaces of interaction. And yet, there I am, just a nigger to you. After receiving the letter, I decided to share with my graduate philosophy seminar. We have been discussing race and embodiment. I think that I wanted my students to help carry some of what I was feeling. I read it aloud. I had not anticipated my emotional response. As I finished, my eyes watered. My body became stiff. I felt a rush of unspeakable anger. I couldn't take this shit anymore, I said. I need a few minutes outside the classroom. Silence pervaded the classroom. Looking back, I wish I had said, fuck it all. It's not worth it. Caucasian people will never value my humanity. You're right about that. So let's end the class session on that. Instead, I came back into the room where everybody was still silent. My students' faces, for the most part, were turned down. I know what they felt. Black students, students of color, Caucasian students alike. They bore witness to my vulnerability, my suffering, and they saw the impact that racism could have within an otherwise safe academic space. A few moments passed, I apologized and resumed teaching, but the classroom was not the same. We had witnessed something together. That space will never be the same. Brother Yancey is a professor of philosophy at Emory University. He is the author of the new book, Backlash, What Happens When We Talk Honestly About Racism in America. I remember when I seen that, and I did read Professor Yancey's Dear White America, and I thought to myself, Here we go again, begging and pleading Caucasians to respect us, to respect our humanity, and look at themselves for what and who they are. I think I mentioned just earlier, it doesn't happen. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They suffer from European Caucasian fragility. I don't give a damn how much you confront them. I don't give a damn how much proof you have in believing there's a whole bunch of it. They will never change. They have made up in their minds, this is who we are. I'm not talking about a friend or colleague that you may have. I worked on the fire department. That's one thing the fire department taught me. That basically, Caucasians are racist, son of a bitches. Basically. The collective Caucasian group. I ain't talking about a few people, because even in the fire department. In fact, one of the firefighters, Caucasian dude, worked with me on my football team. Worked with me for 30 years. We put our money together to help our kids in my community. In fact, the last 15 out of 30, my uniform was red, black, and green. That's right. I told the kids who the uniform was about and the colors. So I'm not talking about some individual Caucasian person. I'm talking about us and them. Because in their mindset, that's what it is. That's why you must understand their evolutionary development and why it caused them to act and think the way they do and why it continues today. And why we continue because of the kind of people that we are. They are xenophobic. We are xenophilic. We welcome them. When people came into Africa, they welcomed them just like the indigenous people in this country. When the Europeans hit the shore, they didn't understand and know that this son of a bitch was going to displace them, kill them, take their stuff. They didn't come to barter, bargain, trade. No, they came to take. That's why when I see the British, you know, if you listen to this program, you know how deeply I distaste and hate the British. We only got a few minutes left of the program. So if anybody got any comments on this, Brother Jay, you got any?
Hey, right quick, Oshie. Why do we constantly expect the Yorugu to act and a loving and caring way toward African people?
We've been trained to.
What the hell is wrong with people thinking that if you point out that the Yorugu is a filthy, stinking dog, that he's not going to bark back? I mean, the reality is the Yorugu is your perpetual enemy till the day you die.
Exactly.
And just because you got Negroes who sleep with that dog, that don't mean that that dog love you. You know what I mean? It's really funny to me that where it is you see our so-called elite always want to get with the Yorugu. And when it's all said and done, it's the Yorugu family who benefits
exactly
from their wealth.
Exactly.
A.K.A. O.J. Simpson and what he did for the Goldman family,
mm-hmm,
who were basically Yorugu trash. And uplifted them into a certain hemisphere and stratosphere, you know, based on the looks of their Yorugu, nasty, stinking, filthy dog daughter. Mm-hmm. So the reality is, until you can accept and love your Africanness, you will always be in this position of looking for love and approval from this dog. It ain't going to happen, bro.
It's not going to happen, because Jay.
That's right. If I was a Yorugu, in all honesty, I would have to treat the Negro the same way. That's why, as an African, I treat the Yorugu that way. Because, listen, the bottom line is we are never going to coexist with one another in a harmonious way. Don't let nobody fool you. Because their history has always been to dominate and to control, mm-hmm, and to oppress us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like I posted on my Facebook page the other day.
if you accept the dollar from your oppressor and you go along with his treatment and you're not going to deal with him on the level that needs to be dealt with when he mistreats you, then you're just looking to accept and be his bottom bitch. That's all it is, bro.
That's all it is. That's
you know what I mean?
Well, listen.
That's all it is.
Yes, but Jay, I got some other calls I'm going to get in.
Hold tough, brother.
Love you, Jay. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend, man.
Same here.
Peace to you. 267, 267. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Ralph. How are you, man?
All right, man. Good. I'm going to make it real quick because I know you got other callers, man. Hey, look, that thing about sovereignty, right?
Mm-hmm.
What that whole definition you gave at the beginning of your program,
right,
actually is freedom.
Yes.
So can't we say what Harriet Tubman said? I could have freed more if they actually knew they were slaves.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. Yeah, I do.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if we call this freedom, then something's wrong with us. I just wanted to bring that up. Another topic I wanted to bring up was I enjoyed your conversation with Brother Paul and Brother Lone Wolf.
Oh, thank you.
From England, UK. I enjoyed that, man. I mean, because it shows you that regardless of what country you're in, it's going to be the same long as this man is in charge.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Number two, and the last thing I wanted to bring up, Brother Oshie, and, you know, since this is a black-owned radio network, you know, because the news media ain't going to bring this out. But, you know, they're still trashing Bill Cosby all over the place. At the same time they're doing that, it's come to find out the Washington Redskins management
they've been pimping
their cheerleaders in Costa Rica, and you know, and
yeah.
So bro, and you don't hear a peep out of it, bro. Yeah.
Well, I did see it. Yeah, I did see it on ESPN yesterday. They brought it on. They had a person talking about it yesterday. But, I mean, even that incident happened a few years ago, and it still happens. And of course, one of the main things they talked about was the disparity of how it happens with the women who want to do the cheerleading and be a part of the whole experience. The fact they don't hardly get paid much, they work long hours and so forth. You know, it's really bull. You know, I think they need a cheerleading union.
So, brother, I just wanted to bring all that up, man. But the thing about it, and one more thing, the whole thing with Dr. Yan, I got to stop. I hope we stop calling these people intellectuals. Because if I put two and two together, Brother Oshie, when I was in the second grade, when school desegregation first went down on Eastern Shore of Maryland, and I put two and two together, there's no living with these people.
Yeah.
That's who they are.
That's who they are.
So, and so I'm going to say this in the words of Teddy Pendergrass and the Blue Note. If you don't know me by now, you will never
know me.
Never know me. You know what I mean? So I'm going to leave you with that, brother.
Right.
Just
on.
Have a good weekend.
You too, Brother Ralph.
Yes, sir. And I'll continue listening.
Right on, brother. Peace to you.
Peace, bro.
All right. Brother Wes.
Hey, yes, sir. My brother, good show, man. Hey, I'm going to check that thing out at Sweetwater Park, man. You know what I'm
Great.
Talking about? I don't like to say what I'm going to be doing, but...
Great. Well,
hey,
listen,
here, man.
Listen. You give
me a out of war, man.
Okay, brother, okay, brother Wesh, give me a call. My phone number is 414.
Okay, hold on. Let me write that down.
Okay.
414. All right.
414-324.
324-5796. 96. And you see my number, right?
Right.
You see?
I got you, Wes.
Okay.
So
see, I studied the art of war, man. Like my man Jay talked about, I'm trying to put some things together. See, but where I study, the main thing it is, I know how to fight the enemy within myself. As long as I know how to fight myself, I'm good. See, I study words. See, words is a spell, man. Okay, that's why when you go to school, you take that spelling test. Words put a spell on people. So I don't let what somebody say control me no more, man. Okay?
I hear you.
And see, we always remember, man, okay, the worst tool in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
That's
right?
What I, hey, and Brother
one
West.
One more thing is,
Brother West, that's what I am.
My... I'm going to throw it out at you is we got to be careful. When we think we fighting the system, we perpetuating and feeding the system, man.
Okay.
Now's the time to think wisely with these devils, man. They right. want to get you on emotional, where they call you a word and they trigger you. That's what's going on now. It's all sound and sight. Mm-hmm. Everything they show you on television, then they get that sound and get you mad, and that's how they control you. The Hegelian dialect, okay? Create the problem, to get the reaction, to get the solution. And see, it's all a mind thing. I'm from the Book of George. This is my man quoting the Book of George and the Book of Micah. But the Book of George say what? Free your mind and your ass will follow.
The P-Funk. Make it's mine off. The P-Funk. I want my funk uncut.
I yield my time to the family.
All right, my brother. Also, too, that's what I end my program. Every program I have, I end it with Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. Thanks a lot. All right, dear brother. Peace to you. Have a blessed weekend. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this opportunity. I know I do have about 5 minutes left. I just want to be, once again, very clear. I try not to cuss on the program, but I thought that what Professor Yancey had received was definitely worth stating it, as he put it into the article, just as he received it, you know. And just as I wanted to exemplify that. I know for some of us, we want to believe that that is a fraction, that there's just a few wayward Caucasians. But the problem for us is that we hope and we pray and we wish that was an exception. No, dear brother. That mindset is the rule. Oh, many of them would not say it like that. Oh, no. But one thing for sure, they want to keep it like that. Just recently, I saw where a group of Caucasians in, I think it was Texas. One of them, they wanted to maintain a school district that they, of course, you know that segregation isn't happening more now. Today than it was back in the 50s when Brown versus Board of Education was settled by the Supreme Court and integration was supposed to take place by all deliberate speed. Today, communities, of course, many communities like my community right here where I live here in Atlanta is being gentrified. You see Caucasian, this is theirs. They took this. Has Richard Spence of the alt-right movement said, we took this not for some kind of grand experiment of integration and assimilation and kumbaya. We took this for our prosperity. We took this for us, for Caucasians. That's why right now there's the move to lessen Africa's input, to lessen Africa's situation by rewriting the history books through the Koch brothers, sanitizing the history, almost making it seem that we came over here for an opportunity. Maybe Kanye was right. It was a choice. You know, that we came over here looking for, you know, just like Bessie DeVos talked about, the HCBUs was school choice. But, you know, Brother Jay is on. He's always, and definitely Brother Ralph. And I love Brother Ralph. I can't wait to meet him one day to give him some love, and Jay as well, and truly Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and all the people that listen to the program and contribute to the program. I really appreciate it. And I come to understand that even though I sometimes don't get a lot of calls, but people are listening. People are listening. And my contribution to the liberation of our people and the freeing of the minds of our people is what I do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And I'm committed and dedicated to doing it. I don't mix words. I don't hem and haw. I don't scratch where I don't itch. I don't laugh when ain't nothing funny. Don't rub my damn head. I see what is being done to my people globally. Dr. Clark said it best. We have no friends. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. Go look in the mirror. You want a friend. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. Not that you liked your eyebrows shaped the way they are, your cheekbone. No. Like what you see. The color of your skin. No matter if it's light, bright, and damn near white to blue black. Love it. Like what you see, who you are culturally, who you are historically, who we are as a people. Like what you see to the love that I have had for my people, for African people. It's not that I don't love humanity, because I do. If anybody who truly knows me, even though I come sometimes very forceful, I love human beings. I love humanity, but I also know what happened. Because I don't hate nobody, but I do hate the system that Caucasians have created, giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. We are dogged out globally. Brothers and sisters, Stephen Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people stands all of the resources that everybody want, can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Esante Sana, thank you. God bless you, family.